If you'd like to support this podcast, please check out our support us page at asymmetricalhaircuts.com.
Yes, do buy us a coffee on Patreon. That way you also get to hear our special War Criminals book club recordings with our fellow international justice reporter, Molly Quell.
He steadfastly insisted that he was guilty, quote, only of aiding and abetting in the commission of the crimes with which he was charged, that he himself had never committed an overt act. And like, I think I could have written that sentence basically for every single defense of a suspect I have ever covered in any trial in any court for like war crimes, genocide, crimes against humanity.
It's often a bit of a riot.
And sometimes it's a serious discussion about books and sometimes not, and sometimes films. And we'll pick things that portray the worlds of international courts and war crimes.
And it's only on Patreon.
Come find us there.
If I look, for instance, at our students, we have a majority of young women in our student body. Where are they and where will they be like in 20 years down the road? I hope they will be there and there will be more and more space for that.
Medieval crimes are being committed.
I come with clean hands.
Victims of horrific crimes want justice.
We don't have anything better than this.
This is Asymmetrical Haircuts, your international justice podcast, with Janet Anderson and Stephanie van den Berg.
All rise.
Hi, Steph.
Hi, Janet. This episode is going to go out on International Women's Day.
Well, of course, every day on this podcast is International Women's Day. But we thought it might be interesting to chat with a couple of fellow interviewers of women in the international law space and discuss what they've learned so far about women and their careers in international law.
So welcome Nathalie Mivela-Tirabosco, who works for the Geneva Academy. Hi, Nathalie.
Hi, Janet. Hi, Stephanie. Thanks for having me today with you.
And we also have Paige Morrow, who's at the Graduate Institute in Geneva and is a senior legal advisor to the UN Special Rapporteur on Freedom of Expression. Hi, Paige.
Hi, thank you so much for having me today. I'm really pleased to be here speaking in a personal capacity, not in my official role.
Paige and Natalie have been working on a podcast called Women in International Law for the Geneva Academy and Atlas Women. That's a network of more than 10,000 women lawyers working in international law.
So let's just jump in with our first question to either of you, whoever wants to answer. Why are you doing a podcast focused on women's careers? I mean, what is it that you're trying to show? Are you trying to explain the reality of career building or what?
Natalie, do you want to take this one?
I think this podcast is about stories first, stories of women who can be both an inspiration for the younger generation. And that includes also our students at the Geneva Academy. Like we have many young women studying with us who want there to start a career in international law. But it's also to give some tips and share experience with other women at any stage of their career. So this is really to share experience, to share career path, and also to build a community of women. And I think we're there really close to what Atlas Networks tries to do, who can share their experience, who can feel they're not alone in their career, that the challenges they face are faced by others, that they can hear how women have addressed those challenges throughout their career. And it's really to build this community and this feeling of being part of something larger than just being alone in one's career.
Paige, you also did some of the interviews and we heard a bit from Natalie why you both set this up. But what do you get out of these interviews? Are there any insights that you already have gotten from the things that you talked about where you thought, oh, I didn't think to look at it this way?
For me, the biggest takeaway was about how our careers are often heading in different directions. And it's only looking behind that we sort of see the dots connect. So for example, in the first interview, we had Lucy McKernan. She talked previously about the challenges as a young mother of three children and piecing her career together and taking some breaks. And I think it creates a space for women to look at career in a really holistic way. And that isn't a conversation that always happens.
So let's just take a listen to Lucy McKernan from Human Rights Watch from your first episode. I spent a bit of time listening to it and picked clips partly with your collaboration as well. And she talks about these kind of twists and turns before she could get into where she feels most comfortable, which is this human rights advocacy work. And you actually asked Lucy for her advice for others. I think that must be one of your standard questions. But then she turned it around and actually described the advice that she had received about career pathways.
I do remember some advice that I got that I thought was very good from one of the partners at the law firm I worked at, very wise woman who emphasized to me that a career is a long period of time and that pathways are not always straight. So even if you have a goal, you don't always get there by the straightest route. Sometimes it's more circuitous. And I thought that was really good advice, that there are different experiences that you can get doing different things along the way. You can kind of meander more in your career to get to where you want to get to. So, yeah, I thought that was helpful.
I mean, in your experience with speaking to these women and listening, I think there's been a number of discussions that you've also held in Geneva around careers and what different roles women have played. Do you find it's quite usual that women have a very varied career path before they move to an ideal job?
I think things are evolving. There's definitely a classic career path in Geneva of starting from an elite university, moving into internships at an international organization or civil society, and then sort of going on a clear ladder up from there. But I think while myself and others have increasingly come from other backgrounds or other disciplines even, and then sort of piece together interesting opportunities and hopefully work to create a story and show how they connect together. And I think that's what's interesting as well with these conversations, is that it shows that there are different pathways to get there and that elite university can help, but it's not the only way to start out.
And Natalie, do you see other regular themes that reoccur in the interviews you've had so far with women about what happens in their international kind of legal careers?
Yeah, one theme that comes back quite often is this whole work-life balance challenge of how do you pursue a career when you have kids and how do you manage this balance? And that has been a challenge that I thought was very, very strong, both in the podcast, but also in the conversations we had in Geneva. So that's one. The other, and it still a bit relates to the work-life balance, is kind of, as it's a job, but it's also sometimes much more than a job because you work for a cause that really matters for you, then you tend to work extra hours and long, long hours with the possibility of burnout, and where you draw the line between your life aside your job and that has been a challenge. And it can be a challenge for women, it can also be a challenge for men, but that was really, really strong. So the other thing that came out was the importance of models, the difficulty of getting this first job in this field to then continue and start. And also to relate to the other questions about the fact that there is not a straightforward career and that a career is made of different things, and that once, as women, we evolve in our career, we start to know better what we like, what we want, when we can say no to things, which is something we cannot probably do when we start. And that's also something that I could see in these conversations.
So another of your interviewees is Yelena Aparach, who's now with the NGO Legal Action Worldwide. But she's also been an academic, and I've known her work as a UN expert on mercenaries. You asked her about the kind of challenges that she's faced, and she outlined quite a few of them.
The other challenge was the fact that I was a woman. Clearly, that was a challenge. And I have had direct comments on several occasions in different contexts that because I'm a woman, I wouldn't understand what the conflicts are, what does it mean to be in the conflict zone, or it's a very male-dominated world, armed conflicts, military aspects. So you often have prejudice coming towards you. Being from Eastern Europe is also one of the challenges that I faced, as there have been presumption that girls from Eastern Europe have a specific positions to hold in a society and not necessarily having decision-making positions or influencing positions. So quite a few challenges, in fact, that I'm sure I'm not the only woman to face, unfortunately.
I was quite taken aback that she actually had people say out loud what maybe a lot of people assume in kind of my job as the media, that I don't get questioned about whether I am a good journalist reporting on war crimes just because I'm a woman. But apparently, if you're a military law expert, it's perfectly fine for your male colleagues to question this publicly, which I found astonishing. So do you think that women working in international law and human rights field have the same issues or get the same pushback from men, or is it less? Is armed conflict specialists a certain kind of army-related person who might be a little less inclined to like women experts?
Well, I would say that the challenges that she faced are certainly visible in other domains of international law. Perhaps they're a bit less explicit, or they may not take the form of direct discrimination on the basis of gender, but rather around sort of inflexibility of dealing with some of the challenges that may come up for women, such as in the context of motherhood, but not only, that would not be faced in the same extent by their male colleagues.
Is that your experience as well, Natalie?
I have no experience of working on armed conflicts related issue, but on human rights for sure. It's more an issue for women, and it's always hard to say when you're in a job to say, okay, sorry, I have to leave at 6 because I have to pick up my kids at school or at the daycare. You would rarely see a male colleague having to do that. And I think rather than saying, okay, it's normal and I can do it, you always feel a bit, you know, ashamed of saying it or doing it while you should not. And so in French, there is this, it's called the syndrome de l'usurpateur. So you always have the impression that you're there, but you're there by mistake, that you don't really deserve it.
Imposter syndrome.
Yeah, exactly. And I think a lot of women have that, that they feel that, well, I'm lucky if I'm there, but yeah, I don't necessarily deserve it. That's a more kind of under the thing stuff. That's an issue.
Well, it's human rights law is a really woman-skewing field. There's a lot of women doing that. But we also find our podcast mainly interviews women about international law. But even we sometimes have trouble interviewing women because some part of that imposter syndrome, it seems, kind of flows over to when you ask somebody to comment on something as an expert when you're a journalist. A lot of women will diminish or kind of play down their expertise and say, well, you know, I only follow this particular thing and I don't want to comment on something broad. And I still find that. Is that something that you also talk about when you talk about women's career, about why this is? Because a lot of the experts we see on international human rights law in the media are still men, even though we're trying to diversify this. Why do you think that is?
I personally think that there's two aspects to it. I was looking at recent research that suggested that if you ask a man and a woman for recommendations of experts in their field, and this isn't specific to international human rights law, the women are equally likely to recommend a female and a male expert, whereas if you ask the man, he's more likely to recommend other men. And so I think there's a certain amount of unintentional bias when one expert who's asked to speak on a topic is asked for recommendations for others, and they may not name a woman who is an expert in the field, or to speak on a panel, or to, you know, for a role, or for consultancy, or whatever the sort of opportunity might be. So that's one aspect of it. And the second, which we're trying to address is with the Atlas Network, is that there can be lack of mentorship for women moving into these roles. And I think the mentorship can help women not only identify the roles, but also to have the confidence to assume them and to put themselves forward as being those experts. And that's sort of an ongoing process that you need to have a lot of, I think, informal support around you to feel that you are worthy of holding that title of expert.
Yeah, I noted that Yelena also mentioned the difference that it made for her having a female supervisor, which also made me think about representation issues, because I think both Stephanie and I have been spending a lot of time in the International Court of Justice recently. Stephanie actually physically, and me just online watching from a distance. And you find yourself counting up who's there. I mean, both in terms of the numbers of judges, and there are, I think currently there are three women sitting on the bench, and there have only ever, as far as I can remember, been five women. I mean, including two presidents of the court, so senior people. And then I was also watching over recent weeks all of the different presentations for the advisory opinion on Palestine, and you look through the delegation and see, you know, the numbers of men, numbers of women. Again, Maldives, for example, had three women presenting, but that was an outlier. There wasn't very much. So I'm wondering how important, I think Paige has expressed how important she thinks mentoring is, but what do you think, Natalie, about representation, about how important it is to actually see women in positions of power?
I think it's key, really, because it's an inspiration. It shows that you can make it and that it's feasible. I always remember when I was working in human rights and when Louise Arbour became the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights. And that was so important. It was really great. And I think for us, it was, okay, it's great. We have a woman who can lead this institution. She's an inspiration. It shows it can be done. It can be at this level of management and role, but it could be also at other level, like lower management level that are less visible, less in the press. But I think it's very important to have that and continue to have that. And I think we have that more and more. When I look also, for instance, at our faculty at the Geneva Academy, how many women we have who are inspirational. And I think that's great and it's key. If I look, for instance, at our students, we have a majority of young women in our student body. Where are they and where will they be like in 20 years down the road? I hope they will be there and there will be more and more space for that.
Before I move on, I want to say for the ICJ, Janet talked about Maldives being the only one represented by all women. But I have to say those women had quite an impact. The Maldives presentation was really, really powerful and really, really well thought out. And so they really kind of provided a little kick at the end of the hearing. I thought that was really, really interesting. Now, in your podcast, you focus on the careers of the women through the lens of which you're asking them about things, but they are also, of course, not only their career, they're multifaceted people. They're often mothers, daughters, members of different communities. How do those multiple identities intersect?
What I think is interesting is that this series tries to really ask women about their full identities. So not just their career, but sort of recognize them as full people. There are not so many spaces where we're able to do that, I mean, except for perhaps an offhand mention of other responsibilities like children or other on LinkedIn or Twitter. We don't normally talk to women about these other parts of their identities in a professional context. And I hope that these kinds of conversations can normalize that to broaden out the discussion and make it more available to not just women, but to everyone to sort of recognize the multiple aspects of themselves and the responsibilities that they have, because it makes it a lot, I think, easier to then have conversations about, do I need special accommodations for a disability or for responsibility that I have, and to also have that conversation then in a workplace setting.
I'm really conscious of how I separate up my identities and try to protect my personal life from my professional life, and make me feel a bit kind of schizophrenic sometimes, because I'm a bit scared of revealing too much about what's going on in my personal life all the time. I mean, nevertheless, on the podcast, I do declare certain things occasionally. So I suppose I'm getting more used to being a bit more out there. But another thing that's kind of struck me with this series is that we are talking about relatively successful women, and women that you are encountering in this very wonderful, rarefied atmosphere of Geneva, where we have these incredible conversations. And I was wondering how relevant you might also imagine your series to be to women who are basically outside of this bubble that you are in and that we also exist in when we're in The Hague, women who are trying to climb up a very different ladder, potentially outside of Europe, outside of North America. Does your series actually work for them as well, do you think?
Yes, it's true that as the series is linked to our events and that these are in person in Geneva, our speakers and our panelists are either Geneva-based or passed through Geneva to participate. And it's true that we might think that, okay, if you are in Geneva, if you work here, you have success, you made it to this rare place. But I think what showed the two interviews we already had is that there are things before you come here. Your career does not start in Geneva. It started somewhere else. And the challenges that you encountered could be relevant to anyone in The Hague, in Costa Rica, or elsewhere, I think. And that's more universal in the way that only for those who are in Geneva. And I think this question also relates to how we define success. What is for us a successful career? Is there such a thing as a successful career? Is the fact of being in Geneva and working in Geneva a marker of success? I'm not sure. And if we don't take it that way, then we might also think that this could be relevant to other. But I agree that, I mean, it's focused on that. But I'm sure the challenges and what I could hear from Lucy and Yelena are things that happen to other women who are not based in Geneva and pursue a career in other places around the world.
I completely agree with everything Natalie just said. I think the one thing I would just add is that as the series moves forward, I hope that there'll be an opportunity to also profile more women from the global south, from different backgrounds that are facing disabilities or facing sort of challenges to inclusion, to make sure that we're profiling as sort of a broad set of women as possible.
And what about your own careers? Are you models or are you more aspiring to be like the women that you interview? Where do you think you are on the scale of your interviewees?
I think I'm neither a model and not aspiring to. I find a woman we interview very inspiring because of what they say, because of their values, because of how they saw their career. And my career path is not at all straightforward. I must say, I started in human rights and then I would have had a different career if I had no children, of course, because that made me change a bit my career path to address what we said, this work-life balance. And I think that's, for me, it was a nice way also to involve in my career and take it differently. I felt really close to Lucy and Yelena, for instance, when they share these challenges and this work-life balance thing. But I don't consider myself as a model, neither as the other. I think we all have our own career paths as women that can take us to different parts. And I think we also realize that there is not such thing as a career, that we might do different things at different moments that make sense for us. And what's a successful career for me now is not at all the same as what I thought 20 years ago. I think we also change our minds on that.
It was very eloquently said, Natalie. I mean, I just turned 40. I have two young children. What excites me in the morning now is to work on projects that I feel are meaningful, that contribute to the world in some way, however small that might be on an individual level, to see myself as part of a bigger picture. I mean, I started out studying development. I went and practiced corporate law. I then moved into human rights and moved from Canada to Europe and now to Geneva. And I can draw certain sort of lines through it, but each sort of move was not necessarily completely evident at the time. And so I guess, opened myself up to the fate a bit more in the sense of trying to work hard in the moment to do what I can and then waiting to see what the next steps will bring. And the women in the podcast, I think, have amazing careers and they themselves are charting their own path. And I've realized that each of us sort of will sort of have our own narratives and stories and sort of bring it together in slightly different ways. And I hope that by profiling them, we can I guess, give some ideas or inspiration of concrete next steps that others can take, especially those that are just entering the field or looking to do that, and say to them, look, it might look slightly different for you. I'm sure that it will look slightly different for you, but here's how others have done it.
Yeah, what you say, Paige and Natalie before, kind of resonates with me, that you need, or you make different decisions at different stages in your life as to what's important in terms of your career. I mean, I feel I've been very privileged that I'm allowed to make choices, that I have sufficient resources to be able to not climb a corporate greasy pole, because it's not what interests me in terms of what I do with my life. But I can live a reasonable life without that. We, at the end of our podcasts, like to ask some different questions, and we'll put the same ones to both of you and see what you would like to say. The first one is to start with whether you have something that you would have liked to have said that you didn't get a chance to say during the podcast. Natalie?
No, I think I said everything. Just to wrap up on this podcast, yeah, I think for us, it's important to build this sense of community, of sharing experience, career paths of women, whether in Geneva or elsewhere, relating to each other and learning and getting. It's a bit of mentoring, indirect mentoring as well, to do that, to give advice and share experiences. And I think that's an important part of this exercise.
As the law nerds that we are, we added a question, or I keep insisting on this question. Do you have a favorite law or case that you like to talk about, either when you were giving classes or that was really an example for you, or that ignited your passion for this field, or that you worked on that you still think about? Any of those things, Natalie?
My God, I'm not that specialized. I haven't been working on human rights case law for quite some time. What interests me at the moment, I would say, but I don't know the intricacies of the cases, are those cases where you have like corporate groups who are brought to justice, like the Ludin group in Sweden for war crimes or crimes against humanity. That's very interesting. It's topical, and that's something I would like to watch and follow.
Paige?
I had the opportunity to work on an amicus curiae brief to interview in the case of Maria Ressa, the Nobel laureate. She was a Peace Prize winner, and she had been charged in the Philippines for cyber libel related to her news website, Rappler. And I think it's an important case in terms of both her own situation, but also showing support for freedom of expression in the region. And she's been pursued on a number of different charges. So we had the opportunity to support her on that. And some of the charges have since been withdrawn.
And our final question is to ask you whether there's something you would like to share with our audience of what you've been reading or listening to or watching, you know, either international law related, or it can be completely not to do with this subject at all. Paige, what would you like to share?
Sorry, I was just thinking, because I have a really bad habit of having way too many books open at the same time. So I was trying to think of what could possibly be international law related. Natalie, does something come to your mind? I need to think one more minute.
Okay, I'm cycling to work, so it's around an hour of bike, way work and back home. And so I love listening to podcasts. That's very good when I cycle. And I listened recently to a podcast called Nowhere to Hide. And it's about the use of chemical weapons in Syria. It's done by an institute in Germany, but it's about their research and how they've researched this issue. But it's really, it's like seven episodes, but it's really like a story where you hear like a doctor from Syria who managed to document this use, like a French journalist who managed to to take evidence, to take evidence across the border. I mean, it's really like a series, like a series on Netflix that you listen to it and you want to go and listen to the next episode. And it's great. And it's, for me, it was really like a great way of presenting the outcome of a research project. And I could only recommend to listen to this podcast on your bike or not on your bike.
I agree. I think the storytelling is fabulous in it. And even if you think that you know all about chemical weapons in Syria, because we've all read reports over the years, this is just, I found it deeply insightful. So thank you for that. And Paige?
So I personally think it's so important to have outside things to sort of relax. And for me, that involves doing something physical. And I just think it's so important because I really need to sort of work on like mindfulness techniques and sort of how to be present in my job, but still maintain a certain level of distance. So I recently trained as a yoga instructor and I'm now giving classes in French, which is a good challenge. And I've been doing a lot of trail running and hiking, because getting back to nature and spending time in nature is so important. I also really recommend watercolor classes.
Watercolor classes? Wow. Can we feature some of your art on the show?
Gladly. I was just at one last night, but I was talking with a colleague about it, and it's just such a good way to sort of really stay present in the moment. You know, you really just look at the flow of the paintbrush and the paint, and everything else just feels very far away.
Reuters offers online art classes for journalists that I sometimes am tempted to take, but never quite do. But maybe I should start.
Well, maybe this will be the push. There's now so many art therapy programs available. I think there's been real recognition of its importance in terms of dealing with trauma and other potential issues.
And just as we finish, can you remind us where to find your podcast? If people would like to listen to it alongside us, where can they find it, Nathalie?
So they can find it on the Geneva Academy website. We have a channel on SoundCloud, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, all the major podcast platforms, really. But if you lost, you can go to our website and then you have the links.
And it's called Women in International Law.
Yes, yes.
So Nathalie and Paige, thank you so much for sharing a little bit of your insights that you're gleaning with this podcast and your own journeys. Just to say, here in Lithuania, there's a real down on celebrating International Women's Day because it is associated with the enforced celebration of things under the Soviet occupation. So don't you dare buy flowers for anybody, because that is completely unacceptable as the cliched view. But nevertheless, I've decided that we can do a little bit of mutual celebration.
We have no flowers, but we have a podcast. We're providing ourselves with a podcast for International Women's Day. That sounds like a great idea. Thank you so much, Nathalie and Paige, for sharing your time and insights.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thanks a lot for having us.
This was Asymmetrical Haircuts, your international justice podcast, created and presented by Janet Anderson and Stephanie van den Berg. This episode has been recorded at home, but we'd like to give a shout out to our regular host, Humanity Hub in The Hague. Music is by audionautics.com, and you can find show notes and everything about the podcast on asymmetricalhaircuts.com. This show is available on every major podcast service, so please subscribe, give us a rating and spread the word.